Good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming in from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls this evening, because we have this on the line this evening, Mr. Paul Williams. And Mr. Williams has a doctorate in comparative religions, but we're going to be talking tonight about a book he's written called Osama's Revenge, because, of course, he, because of his experience in comparative religions and understanding the Muslim faith when 9/11 came around, why he was very much in demand. Thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
Oh, my pleasure, Dr. Stan.
And, of course, you've written a lot of books yourself, haven't you, through the years?
Yes, about 20.
All right. But, of course, most of them were they more theoretical rather than practical, like Osama's Revenge?
Most of them were religious books. Some of them were philosophical, history, philosophy type things. So one on Peter Abelard, the 12th century philosopher. But I'd say this one is probably, I don't know. I Dr. Stan, I kind of like them all.
Well, I'm sure you do. And every book you write is just sort of part of you. It reflects a great deal of study and thought on your part, and you pour your whole heart and soul into writing. I love to write things. I do a newsletter every month, and every one of them is just sort of an inspiration to me. I learn more than probably the people who read it. But anyway, of course, after 9/11, you were asked to work as a consultant with certainly the intelligence agencies.
Well, what really happened was I served as the editor and publisher of a newspaper in northeastern Pennsylvania, and at that time I came in contact with many organized crime figures, and because of that I really ended up doing work for the FBI for about 5 years, and during that time I came in contact with I did a lot of work with them, not only in terms of the crime families in New York and New Jersey and Philadelphia area, but also with international terrorism. And that really led me to this book on Osama's revenge.
All right, fine. Of course, really, there's a fascinating insight into Osama bin Laden and the man. And, of course, he wrote a letter to the United States, to the people of the United States. And I think every American should read that letter. You're not going to see it. Maybe you can find it up on the web someplace. But, we always see the excerpts from Osama's letters. We never read the whole thing and see what he's really saying. And well, what is he saying? What is his message to the American people that perhaps we should think and contemplate?
Well, he says that he must kill 4 million Americans for the sake of parity. He believes that we were responsible for 4 million Muslim deaths. A lot of it because of the sanctions against Iraq after the Persian Gulf War. He believes that we have committed atrocities by our invasions of Muslim lands. He believes that we have exploited the natural resources of the Arab people. He believes that we have established military bases that are an effrontery to the Muslim faith between the two holy cities of Mecca and Medina. And he believes that we have polluted the world with our immorality.
All right, we're going to be back in just a moment. And have we polluted the world with our immorality? Have we? Are we responsible for the deaths of innocent men and women and children in Iraq because of our sanctions that were put on after the first Gulf War? We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Paul Williams. His book is Osama's Revenge. And, I always tell our listeners that men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. The average individual here would never do anything intentionally, I believe, to hurt a Muslim, but perhaps by our inaction, we condone what our government does. And certainly, there was tremendous suffering throughout Iraq over many, many years following the first Gulf War because of our policies. And what is indeed so incredible is that if you really study the events that led up to the first Gulf War, why, we were helping Osama right up until, Saddam, right up until the war itself. And at least there are many reports that the American ambassador, whether mistakenly or intentionally, we don't know, but had almost given Saddam Hussein the go-ahead to attack Kuwait, and then suddenly why he was involved in a war with America. And be that as it may, however you look at it, the sanctions that were applied to Iraq did not hurt Saddam Hussein. They hurt the Muslim people there. And so certainly some enraged by that and the deaths of children there because they couldn't get medicines, they couldn't get vaccines. So why don't you pick up the story from there?
Not only the sanctions against Iraq, but he also speaks a great deal about the invasion of Somalia, which he believes was totally unjustified on the American part. And our invasion of a Muslim land and Muslim people at that time for a Muslim problem, he figures because of that we have to be punished as well. But he has a whole laundry list of offenses that we have committed against the Muslim people, and he outlines them, as you said, in that letter. I think that one of the most important, or one of the most salient things that he writes about is the example of President Clinton. The fact that President Clinton could engage in oral sex with an intern, and due to that, he would not be driven from office in shame, that he suffered no punishment at all, that he's now revered by the American people. For Bin Laden, that's one of the moral travesties of our time, and for that, he believes as well, we have to be punished.
All right, well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Paul Williams. His book, Osama's Revenge, is fascinating because it has a great deal of information in it, and the letters that Osama bin Laden has written to the American people that they've never read. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is, of course, Paul Williams, his book, Osama's Revenge. And we carry the book because we think it's an important book, because it has, for instance, there, the letter that Osama bin Laden wrote to the American people explaining why America must be punished, why 4 million Americans must die, and, of course, the Muslim thought process really is sort of an eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth, isn't it, Paul?
Oh, yeah, Dr. Stan. He, as a matter of fact, he constantly talks about parity, what has to be done just for the sake of parity, and that's like to restore the moral balance to the universe. And since we've done all these things against the Muslim people, just for the sake of balancing this moral balance, 4 million Americans, two million of whom must be children, must die. And once we have that playing field, the 4 million Americans dead, then it can really conduct the jihad from there.
All right. Well, I think it's so significant, as you point out, that Osama bin Laden is incredibly popular throughout the Muslim world. Would you like to talk a little bit about those CIA polls of the young people in Saudi Arabia and elsewhere in the Muslim world?
Well, the CIA conducted a poll of Saudi Arabians between the ages of 19 and 45 who were educated, and they asked their opinion of the United States and their opinion of bin Laden. 90% of them had an unfavorable opinion of the United States, and 90% of them had a very favorable opinion of bin Laden. If you travel through Saudi Arabia right now, through the shops and the marketplaces and the houses, pictures of bin Laden are omnipresent. He is everywhere. He's venerated throughout the Middle East right now as the Mahdi, as the coming prophet. And he's the most common name of young born boys now throughout the Middle East is Osama.
Well, now, was he that popular before the invasion of Afghanistan? In other words, I thought that right after 9/11, why there was a tremendous empathy and perhaps even support for the American position that was lost after we did attack Afghanistan rather than negotiate with Mullah Omar, who said he would send Osama out of the country to a third country to be tried, and we weren't interested in any sort of negotiations at all. We insisted on the invasion. What about the attitude immediately after the attack on America compared with what it is today?
Well, absolutely. Since 9/11, the popularity of bin Laden has skyrocketed. He is by far the most popular person in the Middle East. I don't mean popular. I mean he is venerated throughout there. As I said before, if you go into Peshawar in Pakistan, if you go throughout the Sudan, if you go into Yemen, into Indonesia, he is absolutely the hero of the people.
And I think you mentioned that people consider him the Mahdi. Now, the average American has no idea who the Mahdi is, but I remember seeing one of the films, it was called Cartoon, I think it was the David Niven version of that, where David Niven plays the part of Chinese Gordon, the famous English general who goes to Khartoum and decides to die there to set an example to embarrass the British government to bring their troops in to put down the uprising. And, of course, at one point in the movie, why he sneaks off into the desert wearing Arab garb and goes to visit the leader of the Muslim rebels, who declares he is the Mahdi. And of course, that is a very important statement. Could you explain to our listeners who the Mahdi is, why the significance of the fact that at this time in history, why the Muslims throughout the Middle East and probably throughout the world look upon Osama bin Laden as the Mahdi?
Well, sure. By the way, that's a very interesting period of history that we were just talking about, and not many people are familiar with that. Chinese Gordon and the Battle of Khartoum, and the prophet who rose then and claimed to be the Mahdi fell out of complete complete repute because Chinese Gordon was beheaded. And he didn't want that to happen. I mean, and because Chinese Gordon was beheaded, he felt that, you know, that was proof that he was not the Mahdi. But bin Laden, his father set up a fund for the Mahdi when the Mahdi, because even the father believed the Mahdi was going to return, Osama bin Laden's father, in the very near future.
And isn't he sort of almost to the Muslims what Jesus Christ would be to
the Mahdi is a prophet, is a prophet who's going to come at the end of history.
At the end of history. I think that's so important.
Right, and the Mahdi is going to make all the world submit, bow down. Islam means submission. Submit before the throne of Allah. He's going to initiate a war against all the kafirs, the unbelievers, the Christians and the Jews and the Hindus, and he's going to make all these people bow down before the throne of Allah. And on that day, the day of Islam will occur, and that's the end of linear history for the Islamic people. So the Mahdi is coming. You will know him by certain characteristics. You know him because he's of the lineage of Muhammad, just like the Messiah is from the lineage of David. He will have certain features. He will have a very prominent nose. He will have a certain mark on his body that will identify him as the Mahdi. He will come from Saudi Arabia, as Osama bin Laden has come, and he will be a great hero of the people, as bin Laden is right now. And he's being hailed throughout the Middle East right now as the Mahdi. As a matter of fact, he started not only using the name Muhammad, he's using the name even in his press releases and in his cassettes that he's sending to Al Jazeera over there. He's using the name Osama Mohammed bin Laden, and he's also, when he does appear, he's appearing with a black turban.
And of course that puts him then into one of the ruling classes. Isn't that what the Shia Muslims do?
He's a Sunni Muslim, right, as we both know. And that character, if you wear a black turban, that's a sign of a prophet. So that's very significant.
All right, and I think the average individual doesn't understand that everything we're doing is, of course, building up Osama bin Laden's prestige throughout the Middle East. And say what you will, I don't think our intelligence units are stupid at all. I really fear that in many ways we're creating a very, very effective and very dangerous enemy. Now, one of the things that was so fascinating is that you've actually had an opportunity in your work to go into the prisons where they are actively recruiting young blacks into the Muslim faith, not simply into the Muslim faith, but into the Wahhabi, the radical, the fanatic, or really the very dangerous form of Wahhabism that threatens the survival of Western civilization, and is largely being paid for with our own tax money. Would you like to cover that for us?
Sure, Dr. Stan. In prisons throughout the country, federal prisons, state prisons, county prisons, if you are a young black and you're incarcerated for, just say, the first time, you will find in the prison population that there's one group that's set apart, one group that has distinctive dress, the distinctive headdress and robes. They have a special kitchen where and special cooks and dietitians catering to them. They're free five times a day. They're allowed five times a day to go from their workstations to pray. They're allowed to take an entire month off for Ramadan. They're granted all these special privileges that protect one another. And if you're a young black there, you will naturally gravitate toward that group because that group will offer you the best food. It will offer protection. It will offer, they will offer you a place to go when you are out of prison. They will constantly keep you under their wing for the rest of your life. And many, as a matter of fact, the most rapidly growing religion within the prison system, well, within the United States itself, is Islam. But in the prison system, it's growing like prairie fire.
But the thing that's so disturbing about this is that the Christians aren't given time off for their prayers.
In the Christians, if you're a believing Christian, and I've seen it, I've been in the prison. As a matter of fact, as we talked about this once before, I was locked in a room with these Muslims for hours and hours and hours. I forgot I was in there, and I'm lucky to get out of there. But in any case, if you're a Christian, and I've seen Christians ask for a devotional time on Good Friday between 9 and 3, they're denied that. They're asked to have certain time during the day when they can have prayer. They're denied that. They can't meet in prayer groups. However, the Muslims, you know, like I said before, five times a day they're granted the same privilege. They're granted separate living conditions. Let alone the special diet and a special kitchen. So, I mean, the way that they're treated in the prison system is almost unbelievable. But we foster this.
Well, but the question is, why would we be actively encouraging a violent religion that threatens the very survival of not only our country, but of Western civilization? Why would we be spending our tax money? After all, we tell everybody there's a wall of separation between church and state. It almost appears it's a wall of separation between Christianity and state, but not between the Muslims and the state. And our government is using our tax money to foster this radical form of Wahhabism. It doesn't make sense.
Absolutely not.
And, of course, you talk about what's going on in the mosques in America, and I think it's so important that people understand that about 80% of our mosques in the United States have been radicalized. Would you like to pick up that thought?
Oh, sure. That came from Sheikh Kabbani. He said that 80% of the mosques now throughout the country are radicalized. And I've been to several of these mosques, and I can verify that.
All right, fine. We're going to be back in just a moment with Paul Williams. We're going to be talking about his book, Osama's Revenge. It's a fascinating insight into, well, a very, very dangerous man, a man who has an agenda, the destruction of America. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Paul Williams, and we're talking about his book, Osama's Revenge. Now, in the mosques in the United States, who is actually funding these radical mosques? Who's putting the money? It costs a lot of money to build a big mosque, and some of these are really beautiful structures.
There's a huge mosque as we speak. It's costing between $30 to $40 million being built in Boston. All these mosques, most of the mosques, I should say, the Sunni mosque, and that's 80% of them, are built with funds from Saudi Arabia, and the Saudis, as we were just speaking about before, the Saudis are Wahhabist. The Saud clan, when they came to power in 1928, and when they assumed royalty in 1932. Made Wahhabism the official religion of Saudi Arabia. So when these mosques are being built, they're being built for radical reasons with a radical religious ideology. If you look at the Farouk Mosque, this is just one mosque among many. I could use a mosque in Cleveland. I could use a mosque in Philadelphia as an example. But just concentrating on this one, the Farouk Mosque in Brooklyn, New York. It's one of the largest mosques there. It's a storefront. It's located on Atlantic Avenue. If you go there, you'll think you're transplanted right into the Middle East. But if you try to go into that mosque, you're not allowed. Christians or non-believers are not allowed to step foot in there. You'll meet two of the biggest guys you've ever met in your life ready to break your legs if you try to walk in there. If you see the bulletin board within the foyer there, you'll see all this notification of rights. That Muslims are not to cooperate with the FBI, with any law enforcement officer. They're not to cooperate with immigration. The Farouk Mosque has raised between $15 to $20 million for Al-Qaeda alone. It has served as a recruiting station for bin Laden. It serves as a place where Al-Qaeda operatives can go and seek shelter. Now, I can't imagine during World War II, my father, who served during World War II, I can't imagine his generation ever allowing representatives of the Third Reich to recruit for soldiers for Adolf Hitler in America. I can't believe that they would allow bums to raise funds for the Third Reich. I can't imagine that they would allow a Nazi agency to provide shelter for Nazi spies during World War II. I know that would never, ever, ever happen. And yet it's happening right now, and the American people are permitting it.
Well, of course, our president has said that anybody, of course, is funding the radical Islamic movement will be, is our enemy, and something's going to be done to stop them. And yet he says one thing, he does another, and the American people find it impossible to believe that the president would say that, well, we're going to, of course, anybody who's supporting the radical Islamists is our enemy. And yet, of course, there are many people within the structure of the hierarchy of Saudi Arabia who've continued funding Al-Qaeda and the radicals, and nothing is done. It's almost as if we're afraid to do anything. We're afraid to do anything in our own country. Oh, occasionally we'll arrest somebody and slap them on the wrist, but a lot of the funding has been coming, we know, going back to 1996. A testimony in the United States said that the government knew that they were funding the radical Islamic movement from the United States, according to testimony that was given at that time. In one of Stephen Emerson's books, he describes, hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Paul Williams. His book, Osama's Revenge, which, if you'd like to know more about the book, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And certainly, Williams was just telling us about what's going on. There are mosques in the United States. There's a $30 or $40 million mosque being built in Boston today. 80% of the mosques in the United States are radical Islamic mosques, where the people are told not to cooperate with the FBI, not to cooperate with immigration, told about their rights, told what to do if they are asked about what they're doing. But they are raising money, and Mr. Williams said that this mosque in New York City has raised something like $15 million for Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, and they're allowed to do that and even recruit people there to go to the Middle East to fight to kill Americans. And he asked the question, why is this happening? And I would ask him the question, why is that happening? Why don't we do what's logical and put a stop to this if America is really threatened by these people? And I believe they are.
Oh, we definitely are. As a matter of fact, I'm firmly convinced that the next attack will be night-night for the American people. And I think that's going to occur very, very soon. I would believe before the end of 2005. I think it's coming that rapidly. But why do we allow it? Why do we believe that everything is relative? Why do we believe that ethics are situational? I can't answer these questions. Why don't we believe that our culture is a culture that we have to preserve and fight for? I can't understand that either. Why does after everything that's happened to us and we see what's happening in Islamic countries throughout the world, how can George Bush say that Islam means peace? I can't understand that either.
And how can he, of course, pray with the imams and say we're all praying to the same God?
Exactly. I mean, look, in the last election, I don't think we had a choice. I voted for George Bush, and I would vote for him again if he were running against Kerry. But I do think the guy needs a slap in the head.
All right. Well, that's a very, very... better not say that too loud, though. The Secret Service might be listening. Under any circumstances, we have so many unexplained paradoxes going on today that just don't make sense. But you go a little bit into the fact that Osama has actually, for many years, been working to acquire nuclear weapons. Would you like to get into that?
Well, he has been in search of nuclear weapons since he was in Sudan in 1993 and 1994. We know from testimony that was presented in court, in federal court in New York, the USA versus Osama bin Laden et al., that a guy by the Jamal Al-Fadl purchased some nuclear material, including enriched uranium, for bin Laden way back in 1994. We know since then that he has purchased nuclear suitcase bombs from the Cheshire Mafia. That's been verified by the Saudis, by the Israelis, by the Brits, by the Russians, by us. The report of that sale made international headlines, except for, you know, here in the United States. We know that he has purchased nuclear weapons from a real scuzz bucket by the name of Simeon Mogilevich from the Ukraine. He purchased vast quantities of highly enriched uranium from this guy, Simeon Mogilevich, as well as nuclear weapons. We know from talking from members of the AQ Khan research laboratories in Pakistan that he has met with Dr. Khan. Bin Laden has met with Dr. Khan. He has met continuously with other nuclear physicists and nuclear scientists from the Khan Institute, including Dr. Mahmoud and Dr. Majid. We've confiscated their laptops, and we know that at least one weapon was developed by these guys in conjunction with Al-Qaeda, and it was deployed from Karachi to the USA.
And so, I think that this is what the average American is not allowed to know. You're not supposed to know that there's really a threat here to go on blithely along with your life without, of course, a serious thought, a feeling your government's going to protect you, and I got news. They have no intention of protecting you. They left our borders open, and they've allowed continual funding of Al-Qaeda, not only from the United States, from our good friends in Saudi Arabia and in Pakistan, and of course, who's funding the people in Pakistan? Why you are. And when we get back, we're going to talk about where is Osama bin Laden. Why can't we find Osama bin Laden? We have the satellites can read a newspaper from outer space. We have the technology to track everybody in the world. We have pictures of people. We have computers. We have video cameras. We have intelligence agents all throughout the world. And if we don't, Israel or the other countries do, we know where Osama bin Laden is. And we're going to tell you when we get back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Unfortunately, when I lift off on that, of course, we have a three-minute break while our listeners, at least out across the country, won't be able to hear your reply to my statement that we know where Osama bin Laden is. So we're going to take that up as soon as we get back. But there's just so many imponderable things that are happening at the present time. But now, how are they actually maintaining the nuclear weapons? Because certainly nuclear weapons need, of course, to have their triggers constantly updated. So they do degenerate, don't they, with time?
Oh, yeah. They degenerate within 6 months. The cores will remain for 15 to 20 years without much maintenance. But the weapons themselves, like a tactical nuke that would fit into a suitcase, don't think of a suitcase bomb as like a bomb that was specially made for a suitcase. We're just talking about a tactical nuke that could fit into a knapsack, that could fit into a piece of luggage like a suitcase.
In fact, you have a picture of that in the front of your
right. That's
very, very impressive when you stop and look at it.
That's Congressman Kurt Weldon from Pennsylvania. He had a mock-up of one made, and that's what's on the cover of the book. But these weapons at any given time exude a temperature of 100 degrees Fahrenheit, which means that they're prone to rust and oxidation, and they have to be maintained. That's why bin Laden sought out the help from the AQ Khan Research Laboratory. He needed these technicians. That's why he has recruited since 1996, when he got back into Afghanistan, Spetsnaz technicians from the Soviet Union. we know that as soon as he arrived in Afghanistan, they're the first people that he was in search of, technicians who could take care of nuclear materials and maintain these weapons. And I don't think he was hiring them just to have them sit around the cave and play cards.
All right, so basically he has access to nuclear weapons. He has the technicians who can maintain those nuclear weapons. The United States has maintained our borders like a, well, sort of like a sieve. Anybody can walk across the border coming into this country. And, of course, we're not doing anything effective to stop them. We have refused steadfastly to seal our borders, and we have to ask why. Well, one reason, of course, since we have unbridled immigration. Now, of course, we can demand that every American has an identification card to make up for the problem that we have intentionally created. This is not happening by accident. You need, of course, to understand who's funding the illegal immigration problem. Well, then you could perhaps understand who's funding much of the radical movement, not only in the United States, throughout the world. And, of course, that's covered in a book called Importing Revolution, going into what the Great Ford Foundation is doing with its funds. We'll be back in just a moment with Mr. Williams. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Paul Williams. His book, Osama's Revenge, and of course we carry the book. We think it has a lot of fascinating material in it. But before we went to the break, why, I was saying that it's well known where Osama bin Laden is. Now, our government claims, oh, we have no idea where he is. Might have got a $25 million reward out for Osama. Yes, we can read a newspaper from outer space. We have, of course, the ability to see in the dark. But, you know, we can't pick out this 6'6" Marfan's a giant who towers above every other Arab in the community. We have no idea where he is. We just can't see him. We could see him before the 9-1-1 attack. We were picking him out with our drone planes, but it seems that since the 9-1-1 attack, he's suddenly become invisible. Where is Osama bin Laden at the present time?
Osama bin Laden, and I think we spoke about this once before.
We did, but remember, this is a completely different audience. We can repeat.
I'm going to say the same thing I said before. That if Dr. Stan, you could get a local Boy Scout troop, and you could direct them to go into the northwest frontier province of Pakistan, and believe me, they will find bin Laden. He's in the Valley of Deer, D-I-R. He has been there for the last few years since the bombing of Tora Bora. He has been spotted there with our satellites, but we spot him there almost on a daily basis. We can't go into that territory because it's a tribal territory. It's not controlled by the Musharraf government. But if we did try to invade that area, the Musharraf government would probably topple.
Yeah, of course, it's going to topple one of these days anyway. And when it does, of course, then the radical Islamists will have all the nuclear bombs that Dr. Khan made. Of course, Dr. Khan is the father of the Pakistan nuclear bomb. He, of course, gave the nuclear technology to Iran and to Saudi Arabia and to, I believe, probably Libya and probably several other countries. But, of course, he's been let off with a slap on the wrist as long as he would admit publicly exactly what he'd done. And, of course, he lives now with his millions and millions of dollars in palatial comfort there in Pakistan, and there's something wrong with the picture. So, anyway, of course, the government knows where Osama bin Laden is, but for one reason or another, they don't want to tell the American people. Now, they could take him out with a drone plane. We have the ability to fly a drone. You can just put a beam down there, you know, and they can knock anybody out they want to. They've done this repeatedly with other members of Al-Qaeda, but for one reason or another, we don't seem very interested in taking Osama out.
They can, with the satellite technology we have right now, they could read the wristwatches of your listeners.
Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you have a question for Mr. Williams, he's certainly on the front lines of this battle. He's has an opportunity to study and study the Islamic faith and to know a great deal more about the Islamic movement than most of the people that I've talked to. He does this because of his background and his training and his understanding of the Islamic faith. He's had an opportunity to go through a great deal of intelligence material from the FBI or what was it?
FBI.
Right. And so you'll find much of that, of course, related in the book. Those things that he can put out, of course, there's certain things I'm sure that you would be restricted from saying, wouldn't there?
By and large, Dr. Stan, I'm saying I've taken the gloves off because I believe that the American people right now are in such jeopardy that if I held anything back that I know, I don't think I could I don't think that I could actually live with myself in those circumstances. So, yeah, I'm kind of unloading as much as I can.
All right, let's go to Tim, who's calling us from Indianapolis. Tim, did you have a question?
Oh, hello. Yes. Well, I'd like to make a comment. I don't think we have to go to Pakistan to find the terrorists. We can go right to New York. You got Larry Silverstein and Mayor.
Well, you're getting a little into a completely different issue. Of course, you're talking about Larry Silverstein, who owned the World Trade Center. Well, we're really talking about Osama bin Laden tonight.
Okay, we
can certainly go into the background of what Tim, I really don't want to get in the background of what happened on 9/11.
We've talked about that many times,
and you know how I feel about it. But let's stick with Osama bin Laden. Did you have any question at all about?
Well, what I learned in 1996. Osama bin Laden, the pseudo quasi phantom terrorist, he was involved in oil exploration in Sudan, planning on building a pipeline out to the ocean front there. But I guess when the Bush family gets involved, they're involved in oil exploitation. So now look at the situation in Sudan, where you have 100,000 Chinese communist soldiers, Goldman Sachs kicking in money, an oil company out of Canada, and you got refugees and poor people running around.
Let's ask our guest. Do you know anything at all about oil exploration?
I mean the real oil lines that we're talking about. If he was going to seek any strategic location at all for that, I don't think it'd be in the Sudan. I think he'd probably be in Afghanistan or in Pakistan. But regarding the Sudan, in 1990, when he was exiled from the Sudan in 1996, of course the Bushes weren't in office; Clinton was, and you know that was a Clinton move to expel him from the Sudan, and it was probably one of the greatest foolish moves in the history of the United States. Because in the Sudan, we could control his movements. We knew exactly what he was and what he was about. Once we allowed him to go back to Afghanistan, especially since Mullah Omar was just coming into power, I mean, we created that nightmare.
And I think we consistently do the wrong thing, and you have to ask yourself why. So basically, of course, as far as the Sudan is concerned, why there are tremendous oil holdings in the southern Sudan, but those are being exploited by the Chinese communists. Fortunately, however, the Chinese communists didn't have the money to put in the oil wells. They raised it on the American financial markets, about $5 billion. Anything else, Tim?
Well, it really upsets me when I hear about these bogus letters being used for mind conditioning to America for more future orchestrated government attacks. I mean, how much more can we auspicate bin Laden?
Okay, thanks so much, Tim.
Thank you.
And let's go, of course, to John, who's calling from Arkansas. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you folks tonight?
Doing fine. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, there's a man on the shortwave radio. You know who he is, Dr. Stan, and he claims that Osama bin Laden is just a CIA agent and always has been.
All right, fine. You're speaking now of who?
No, sorry.
You don't want to mention the man on show.
Well, you know who he is.
All right, fine. Let's ask our guest. There are some people who believe that Osama bin Laden had worked for the CIA during the 1980s, during the Afghan War. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we know that during the Afghan War that the Reagan administration provided millions and millions of dollars of support to the Mujahideen because of aid in their struggle against the Soviets because we want the Soviet Union to collapse and certainly we supplied not only material and Stinger missiles and things like that. But we also provided a great deal of funding to the ISI, to the Pakistani Secret Intelligence Agency, to funnel money to the Mujahideen. in that way, I think you can say that, yeah, bin Laden was an agent of the the CIA. But as far as being a direct paid agent, somebody whom they met with regularly and supported, I don't think that's the case.
Well, certainly after the 9/11 attack, there were a number of members of the bin Laden family here in the United States.
That was outrageous.
Well, would you like to perhaps to go into that for our listeners who don't know about
it? Could I just say one thing more?
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, is that I hope that Osama bin Laden really is what he says he is, and I hope that he can destroy the neocon Zionist occupational government which controls and runs the United States of America.
Well, I think if he does, he'll destroy America. Then I certainly oppose the neocons. I do not believe it's a Zionist movement. I believe it's going to destroy Zionism, but that's my opinion. God bless. Thanks so much. But
well,
anyway, Chris, why don't you simply go ahead and mention what happened right after 9/11?
After 9/11, one of the outrages that occurred was transporting, allowing, like an airlift of the many members of the bin Laden family and many Saudi, prominent Saudi officials to leave the United States for this airlift. One of the Saudi officials we allowed to leave was bin Laden's brother. And bin Laden's brother was very active in setting up, training cells of Al-Qaeda in South America. He was very much involved in meeting with Lula, the president of Brazil, and helping Lula in the development of nuclear weapons. I believe that bin Laden's brother also was instrumental in a connection between the AQ Khan Research Laboratory and Brazil that gave them the ability to enrich uranium and to produce nuclear weapons. And they are nuclear capable right now.
Now you're speaking of Brazil.
Brazil.
So
right?
Here you have a liaison between the radical Islamists, the jihadists, and of course the Marxists, because Lula is a Marxist. So, and this is not simply isolated to Brazil. This is happening throughout the entire world. We see communist China working with, of course, Iran, which is radical Muslim, not necessarily Al-Qaeda, although they certainly have worked in the past with Al-Qaeda, and the Marxists in Russia working with Iran. And so we begin to see this very strange alliances developing every place, but they have one thing in common, a hatred of the United States
exactly.
of America.
Does
that make our statement?
Absolutely, Dr. Stan. There's a nexus of evil in the Western Hemisphere, and that's what the Bush administration seems to be blind to, and that's Brazil, Venezuela, and Cuba. And that is just as nefarious as the axis of evil of Korea and Iraq and Iran. As a matter of fact, I don't believe that Iraq should have been that axis at all.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Tony, who's calling them from Soquel. Hi, Tony. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. I read Don Perkins' book as well as, you know, heard him on your show.
Right.
And he talked about, you know, being an economic hitman and how they go in trying to take over financially, and if they don't do that, they send in the jackals. If they don't do that, that doesn't work, then they send in the military. Well, one of the big things that I thought was a revelation in his book was he talks about that, call them the Eastern establishment, whatever, they made a deal with the Saudis that during the 70s, that if they would reinvest all of their money into American treasury bills, that we would guarantee the price and the flow of oil and basically protect them. And that was a big revelation that came out of that book. My question is really, what's Osama's present status with the Saudi royal family? And if maybe they're trying to just placate the guy so that the Saudis don't dump all those treasury bonds that we made a deal with them.
All right.
Anyway, that's my question.
That's an excellent question.
Go ahead, Go ahead.
Yeah, his relationship is very interesting right now in Saudi Arabia. The royal family despise him because, first of all, he's encouraging revolution against the Saud royalty. The people love him, and the people venerate him. So it's a very, very interesting situation there between the popular support that he has. And yet he has called upon, he insists that the royal family have to be driven from office.
And there's a fascinating book, another one that Tony did not mention. It's called The House of Bush, The House of Saud, where the author points out that the Saudis have about 866, something like that, that could be wrong, 866 or 67 or $65 billion invested in the United States in one form or another. $860 billion invested. That's almost $1 trillion. If that money were to pull out tomorrow, why, what would happen to our financial markets? So what we've done is we've made a pact with the devil, haven't we?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's everything you're saying is right on target.
Okay, well, of course, we've got about 3 minutes more. What are some of the things you'd like to leave with? Well, no, actually, we've got about 6 minutes more, so we can take another call if somebody would like to talk to Mr. Williams. He's certainly very knowledgeable. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And I think that the American people should be well aware of what Mr. Williams is talking about, what's happening in Brazil, and what's happening, of course, in Venezuela, and to a lesser extent in Argentina. And, of course, all of these countries are working together. Even the new government in Chile is working along with them. There's tremendous feeling of anti-Americanism sweeping throughout South America today. And these countries, many of them Marxist in their background, are making common cause with the radical Islamists in their goal to topple the United States of America. And people say, oh, everything's fine, nothing's ever going to happen here. I think we're living in a fool's paradise. What about you?
Dr. Stan, it's going to take... he wants to create an American Hiroshima. That's all he has spoken about since the issuance of his fatwas. That American Hiroshima, he wants seven tactical nuclear weapons to go off at seven sites throughout the United States at the same time. This requires a great deal of orchestration. It requires having everything in place, the personnel and the weapons and in any case, there's 5,000, according to every intelligence that we're looking at, including the testimony of the Muslims themselves, or Sheikh Kabbani, and people like that. There are 5,000 sleeper agents already in the United States plotting the next 9/11. And we know that a lot of these nuclear weapons that we're talking about have entered the United States, and we are just waiting for one of them to go off. And if and when, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. General Habiger, who was in charge of strategic weapons at the Pentagon, said that it's now a question of when, and he believes it's going to be very shortly. When that occurs, America as we know it will be gone.
Let's go to Paul calling from Ohio. Paul, does you have a question?
Yeah, I had a question about the bankers are supplying a lot of these people too. The best enemy that money can buy. Am I on the right track, Dr. Stan?
Well, I think that unfortunately there are other forces at work that most people are unaware of, and this, of course, is the spiritual forces energizing so much of what's going on. But I don't want to get off on that this evening. But you're absolutely right. I believe that there really are people today who have a different agenda.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. I'll let you go on with your guest.
Thank you. Much. And, of course, I believe that we are behind everything that's going on. I just got from one of my friends a long treatise on how wonderful the United Nations was and the coming world government. And it's put out by a Luciferian organization called the Lucius Trust. Do you feel acquainted with them?
Thank heaven I'm not.
All right, fine. Well, we actually get all of their publications. They're actually a Luciferian organization here in the United States and throughout the world. They have offices in Geneva and in London. But we get their publications regularly, and I was just so surprised with their tremendous support for the United Nations. Of course, their goal is the one world government, the new world religion. We'll be right back here. Okay, I think that is what Paul was talking. Paul, who was just calling us from Ohio, was referring to that aspect of the struggle. But certainly, for the average listener out there who doesn't understand that we really are involved in a spiritual battle behind the geopolitical battle, would you agree with that at all?
Oh, absolutely. The spiritual power of the American people right now is negligible. I was just reading an article that was very, very interesting that says that church attendance in the United States has reached an all-time low. I remember like a couple weeks after 9/11, everybody flocking to the churches, even to the mainline churches. And I remember the news media, Time and Newsweek, saying, oh, this is a resurgence of religion. Well, guess what? That was just an illusion. Religion is, church going in the USA right now is at an all-time low. And I do believe that that we are faced with principalities and powers of evil regarding this struggle. I think that these powers are very capable of overcoming the American people, since we have no spirituality at all. And I would advise your listeners to do two things. One is to be vigilant, and second is to get right with the Lord.
I certainly couldn't disagree with that at all. In fact, this is our recurrent theme here at Radio Liberty, is to try to point out to people that, you know, we're not going to see any possible hope. I'm not sure there is hope for America, but if there is, it would rely upon a great revival in America. But there's going to be revival that has to start with us. It can't start with them, because we always want them to come to a personal relationship with the Lord. But we never want to admit that we got real problems in our own lives, every one of us, and including me. So I certainly appreciate so very much your being with us. We've got about 1 minute. Do you have any parting thoughts for us?
Yes, I do. Something that you said in the beginning, and I want to pick it up. I want to pick it up right now. St. Augustine, one of my favorite philosophers, said this, and it goes along with the way you introduced this show. He said, "The complacency in the face of evil is the greatest evil."
Complacency in the face of evil is the greatest evil. Now, Augustine, okay, now is this the 4th century?
Absolutely, St. Augustine of Hippo.
Okay, fine.
But I think that that's the case right now. We think that we are living the good life, that we are standing up for righteousness by doing nothing. And that allows all these things, these evils, to foster all around us and to grow.
And the price that good men pay for their apathy and indifference to evil, public affairs that are ruled by evil men. Paul Williams, thank you so very much for being with us. It's a real pleasure. God bless you. Thanks. I hope we can get it on again sometime.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night.
Good night.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, our guest this evening was Paul Williams. And Paul Williams has written a fascinating
book,
Osama's Revenge. And we do carry that book. And we think it's got a lot of very important information in it. Now, some people believe that Osama bin Laden is a CIA agent. Other people believe, of course, that for some reason or other, we're not really trying to get him. And I don't think you can understand anything that is going on in the world today. As Mr. Williams pointed out, we're still allowing them to recruit money and Islamic fighters here in the United States. And it really doesn't make sense if you look at things logically. But if you understand that it's not really logical, that there really is these spiritual forces working behind the scenes, then this all begins to make sense. Now, how are we going to convince people of this? Well, as many of you know, I wrote a book called Brotherhood of Darkness, and it is available. It's in its, it's getting started. It's 8th printing, I think. And, of course, in the process of doing that, why we can drive the price down by printing enough copies of the book. And so if you're interested, of course, what we want to do is if we get enough copies, then, of course, we can get them down to rock bottom. And if you'd be interested in getting a case of Brotherhood of Darkness, well, I think you'd be surprised at how economical they would be, and would ask that you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And you have to get 62 books in the case. And we're up to, I think that as of this evening, if we had 40 cases we needed to have taken, and certainly we're up to 23. So once this offer is then completed, why, we're not going to be able to continue offering this until we do another reprinting, and I hope that'll be at least sometime, some years ahead. But the beauty of having a case of the books is the fact that you can lend them out, you can do whatever you want, you can sell the books for all I'm concerned. The major thing I want, of course, is to get the message out, so people will begin to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of mankind and the survival of Western civilization. So if you're interested, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. If you've not yet seen the videos, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, or that's the 3-hour, the 4-hour, or the 10-hour version. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. If you want to understand about the Beatles, you want to understand about the Led Zeppelin, you want to understand about Michael Jackson, and certainly Marilyn Manson, and Ozzy Osbourne, and so many of the popular songs of today and yesteryear. I should say the popular stars of today and of yesteryear, why you need to watch They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. To get an overview of what's happening, we think the videos Megiddo 1 and Megiddo 2 are excellent sources of information, and I have a small part in Megiddo 2. That's a 3-hour, very professionally done presentation. Megiddo 1 is 2.25 hours. Our video, Mendare College Genocide, I think gives you an overview of why they're fluoridating the water, why they're putting toxic doses of mercury in our vaccines that will destroy the minds of our children, and why they're encouraging everybody to get their flu shot before the influenza epidemic is over. The flu epidemic's going to be over in just 2 weeks. You better rush down and get your flu shot while you still can, while there's still a supply. Why would you do that when it's got toxic doses of mercury even for adults? And what does it do to the 6-month-old children they're trying to get to take it? And why is your doctor encouraging you to get the flu vaccine? Well, it's because he really doesn't know, but you need to get the information. You need to get our material on mercury and on aspartame and on fluoride. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, because if there's not revival, America will cease to exist as we know it. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until Monday, when we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But we ask that you hold your calls for the time being, because, of course, we have with us this evening one of my favorite guests, John Spring. And John has his own radio program in Southern California. He's taught at the college level. He's a geographer. And, of course, geographers study not only the geography of the physical makeup of a land, but every aspect, including the political makeup of a land. And he has certainly contacts with people in the Middle East. Always a fascinating guest to have. John Spring, thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
Well, Dr. Stan, as usual, it's always an honor.
Well, tell us your thoughts. We've seen this last week, why this tremendous explosion in the city of Beirut that killed almost 100 people, or killed or injured 100 people. And, of course, this would appear to be a very intentional effort to kill the ex-premier of Lebanon. And, of course, we're immediately blaming Syria, ignoring the fact that he was just in Damascus talking to Assad last week. They could have killed him there much more easily than blowing up 100 people in Beirut. And, of course, immediately, why we accuse Syria, oh, Syria did this, and sort of like I remember during the Spanish-American War. Of course, I don't remember, but I've read about it. Immediately we said, oh, it was the Spanish who sunk the Maine, or you know, you always accuse the other guy when you want an incident to go to war. So immediately we pulled our ambassador out of Syria. Now, this is the first step along the way to war. I don't know when the war with Syria is coming, but I know it's coming because I've heard Mr. William Crystal, who leads the group known as the Project for the New American Century, that is directing American foreign policy, and anybody believes that Condoleezza Rice or Colin Powell directed foreign policy is incredibly naive. Everything is being directed according to a grand plan laid out by the Project for the New American Century. You can go to their website, newamericancentury.org, newamericancentury.org, or you can go back and read some of my newsletters where I talk about William Crystal's interview with I guess it was on ABC, to Ted Koppel, when William Crystal, who was the chairman of the Project for the New American Century, talked about how we were going to take out Syria, we were going to have a regime change in Iran, and eventually in North Korea and in Saudi Arabia. And, of course, if you read the book Winning of Modern Wars by Wesley Clark, General Wesley Clark, who ran for the Democrat nomination for presidency, and General Clark commented that, you know, he had gone back to the Defense Department, talked to his friends there, who said, oh, yes, there's a plan to clean the swamp in the Middle East, referring really to taking out all of the countries we've talked about, but North Korea. The Defense Department, the Pentagon's been planning on doing this for a long time, but you have to have a justification. If there was not an incident, how would you get the American people to go to war? I mean, we had to have an incident to get them to go to war in the Spanish-American War. We had to have an incident get them to go to war in the First World War and the Second World War and in Korea and Vietnam. That was the Gulf of Tonkin incident that didn't occur. And, of course, the incident that we had to have to get into the First Gulf War, and now that we're in the Second Gulf War, always have to have an incident. We'll be back here in just a moment with John Spring. Well, John, what's your interpretation of what's going on over there and our pulling our ambassador out of Syria?
Well, it's a very complex situation, Dr. Stan, in that Syria has had a very close alliance, very close ties with Iran, and also with the former Soviet Union and with current Russia. And Yevgeny Primakov, of course, left one legacy behind, which was establishing very close ties with Iraq, Syria, and Iran, as well as Sudan to a lesser extent. Now, this is rather significant in terms of the conventional geopolitical thought, but with respect to Lebanon, you have a very highly complex situation in which you have so many factions within this small nation, this small Arab nation, which is currently under the control of the Syrian army, but still there are many factions that can actively carry out operations such as we just alluded to earlier, the explosion which killed so many people. And traditionally, the president of Lebanon has generally been a Westerner, generally a Christian,
quite often a Mormon, from what I've heard.
A
Mormon of the Church of Latter-day Saints of Jesus Christ.
I'm sorry.
I know it's hard to believe. And the premier is, by tradition, generally a Muslim.
Now, I thought that he was a Christian, a Marian Christian, the specific type of Christian, not a Mormon.
Well, I may stand corrected. I asked my friends from Lebanon years ago about this, and I tried to get a clarification, and undoubtedly you are correct, and perhaps the linguistic problem that they had with some English words.
I could not imagine that they'd have a Mormon as the premier, but this is always the way it's set up. One is a Shia Muslim, one is a Sunni Muslim, and one is a Christian. So
you're
able to get the three groups to live together, and they got along pretty well for many years.
Yes, they did, Dr. Stan. But then you had factions from Iran with its Hezbollah taking action within Lebanon itself. You had other groups, some of which were trained by former KGB agents during the Cold War, and some of those people are still around.
Hold that thought there for just a moment, John. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is John Spring, and of course he's giving us a rundown of what's going on in Lebanon, where we have both Muslim and Christian, and I've forgotten whether it's the premier or the president, is a Muslim, one of the, probably a Shia Muslim or a Sunni Muslim, and then you've got a president who's a Marian, a Christian, and then of course you've got the chief of the defense force who's a Muslim. So, but they were all able to balance the power, and of course at one time Lebanon was known as the Switzerland of the Middle East, or the Switzerland of the Near East. It was a beautiful, prosperous city, and then of course, as so often happens, it tragically happens, why, it was engulfed in a war and totally destroyed, and the people are living in poverty and constant fear, and tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of Lebanese have been slaughtered in the continual warfare, and today, why, of course, the Syrians occupy militarily not only the Baca Valley, but certainly the power centers there in Lebanon, which is a constant source of irritation for the Israelis, because now, of course, they can lob their weapons and their mortars and their artillery on into Israel on a regular basis, at least the northern part of Israel. So you pick up the story from there, John.
Well, right now there are more questions than answers. We really don't know who was responsible for this explosion.
But of course, we have said it's the Syrians. We've accused them. We've pulled our ambassador out. Why would we do that when we can't be absolutely certain? How do we know who put the Syrians deny that they're responsible for the bombing?
And they may very well be. But you must understand, you have many American interests and Israeli interests that very much want to invade Syria, just as we went into Iraq. You have to understand that Syria has always been a formidable military threat for Israel, and there are certain groups within Israel that would very much like to do away with the regime in Syria and weaken that nation for very justifiable reasons from their perspective.
My understanding is they have more Scuds missiles than any other, of course, country there in the Middle East, and of course they are quite capable of reaching almost all of Israel with those Scud missiles.
Yes, this is true, Dr. Stan. And so from an Israeli perspective, I can see that the fear that they live under on a daily basis. However, what we need to do is, just as in the case that we should have done with respect to Iraq, we should have isolated our interests from Israel's interests, so to speak. And currently, we are more or less following the plan which the Israeli intelligence agents laid out to the group that you alluded to earlier with William Kristol as its leader. And unfortunately, they are very influential. These are people such as Paul Wolfowitz within the Pentagon and Libby and a few others, even Rumsfeld, that are very determined that Syria or Iran should be the next target. Now, militarily speaking, Syria is an easier target than Iran. I don't think there's any argument about that. And so I guess their rationale, and since it's in closer proximity to Israel, it makes only sense from their standpoint to target Syria first, if indeed they are planning to invade these nations in a sequential or logical order of some kind.
Well, I don't think there's any question this is what intended, because this is exactly what William Kristol told Ted Koppel in an interview that we saw on... it was on Nightline, and we actually have the text of that, and we write much of that out in my one of my newsletters. I'm not sure which one, but if you can go on my internet website, that this would probably be somewhere in the year 2002, shortly after the 9/11 attack, when William Kristol, chairman of the Project for the New American Century, laid out their plan for simply taking over all of the Middle East. This is the long-range plan. You can, of course, read about it on their website at newamericancentury.org. You want to get their publication, Rebuilding America's Defenses. It's 76 pages. That's newamericancentury.org. Their treatise on rebuilding America's defenses, where they say we must have our troops permanently stationed in the Middle East, irrespective of whether Saddam Hussein is in power or not. So anybody who thinks our troops are coming home really doesn't understand there's a long-range plan by a group of people who of course, are not answerable to the American people, but today control the Bush administration. Who are the people? Well, the original 25 members of the Project for the New American Century included Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, John Bolton, a man named Liddy, who, of course, the chief of staff for Dick Cheney, Elliot Abrams, and there are three or four others in key positions. There are only 25 in this little group, and so many of them are in key positions in the government today. We call them neocons, call them whatever you want to, but they have an agenda. People try to discredit anybody who talks about this group by saying, oh, you're anti-Zionist. This group is not Zionist. Their policies, I believe, will lead to the eventual destruction of Israel. So pick up the story from there, John.
Yes. Now, Dr. Stan, I don't claim to know everything about the entire current situation in Lebanon, but I will say this, that that during the Reagan administration, I did send a letter to then Secretary of Defense Caspar Weinberger, advising him that our Marine barracks encampment in the vicinity of Beirut was very vulnerable for an attack. Unfortunately, they did not heed my warning in time, and that, of course, became an attack of either Hamas or the Hezbollah organization sponsored by Iran.
I mean, it was Hezbollah. In fact, that's covered in the book called See No Evil by Robert Baer. And that was the whole purpose of the book from the very beginning to the end. Who was responsible for it? And, of course, the incredible thing was the government knew the attack was coming. They knew it was Hezbollah. They did nothing to stop it. And they did nothing to punish Hezbollah afterwards. And you have to ask yourself, why would you allow, I think, 100 or more Marines, a couple hundred Marines to be blown up there? Why wouldn't you defend against the attack? Why wouldn't you punish the people who did it? And not only there, locally, but, of course, largely funded by Iran and by Syria. Why, unless you, of course, were actively encouraging this terrorist movement, at the time, the schedule, the plan was not yet in place to follow through and to really take on the whole Islamic world, which is what we're doing today. So that attack occurred, what, about 1983, didn't it, John?
I think it was about a year later, but
maybe it was 84.
We also have almost forgotten as Americans that just prior to that, there was also the bombing of our U.S. Embassy in Beirut, which was quite destructive. Similar to the Murrah building in Oklahoma City. These terrorist operations have been carried out, and as you pointed out, there were no plans really to go against Iran or punish Iran or Syria for those dastardly deeds which they were allegedly responsible for, according to our intelligence sources. But for some reason, we took a policy of ignoring these terrorist groups and their operations and the sponsoring terrorist states behind them. And all of a sudden, now that the Cold War has ended, these nations apparently are going to become some of our future targets. And what bothers me, Dr. Stan, is I'm sure it bothers you, we are spread so thin, militarily speaking, throughout the world right now. In fact, we don't have the means of even defending our own borders here in North America. And basically, we are very vulnerable to a terrorist operation. As I think I pointed out on one of your earlier programs, Iran is a nuclear power. It isn't about to become one. It is. It has nuclear warheads. It does have long-range missiles capable of targeting European nations. And with its fleet of, I believe, 3 submarines, several naval vessels, and, of course, a fleet of merchant ships and other oil tankers, it could launch these missiles from offshore of the United States and target many American cities, sort of a mini-missile crisis type of scenario. And yet, we have heard so little in the news. I think we heard Dr. Condoleezza Rice, our current Secretary of State, and our President George W. Bush just about 2 weeks ago say that hopefully Iran will not build a bomb of its own. Well, it already has the bombs. It has the warheads. And if it didn't manufacture them completely independently, they certainly took advantage of trade with Russia and North Korea and China and Pakistan to build up their own arsenal.
Well, for our listeners out there, John and I have both talked to a man named
Yosef Budansky.
Yosef Budansky, who is, of course, the chairman of the Congressional Task Force, Republican Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare, a man with vast connections with intelligence agencies throughout the world. In fact, I'm sure the Mossad. But he has information, and he had written several years ago that Iran had at least 3 or 4 atomic weapons. They've had them for a long period of time. If Yosef Budansky knows, certainly our intelligence knows. Now, they didn't produce them themselves. They bought them off the open market. But believe me, they could produce a tremendous amount of damage. What they want to do is be able to produce large numbers of them on their own. Of course, where did they get their missile technology? Why, they got it from Communist China. Where did the Communist Chinese get it from? Why, they got it from the United States. What's wrong with this scenario? Well, nothing makes sense unless you understand there really is a brotherhood of darkness. We're moving into World War III, and God is going to bring his judgment on America because we've turned against him. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is John Spring. And go ahead, John, just to develop some of your thoughts along that line. You know, certainly Iran is working very hard to develop, the capacity to produce more in the way of nuclear weapons, although even 3 or 4 atomic weapons could do a tremendous amount of devastation. We saw what the simple atomic weapons did to Hiroshima and to Nagasaki during the Second World War.
Yes, and I personally have been to Hiroshima to see what it did to Ground Zero, basically, and I, of course, visited their museum related to that atomic attack. I also visited Kokura, which was the other primary target, but fortunately for the port of Kokura across the Bungo Straits on the island of Kyushu, and, of course, Hiroshima was on the largest island, Honshu. There was cloud cover overhead, and so the B-29 carrying the second bomb had to go to its secondary target, which was Nagasaki. But that's getting a little bit off the subject in terms of what is transpiring in the Middle East. For example, Budansky also has pointed out from very reliable sources that the North Koreans and Chinese, but especially the North Koreans, have developed a technology whereby they can dig bunkers and tunnel systems as deep as 2,000 meters below the Earth's surface, which is more than a mile. And we have very little, if any, remote satellite imagery detection systems which could detect anything under the ground at such a depth. And even the entrances are very difficult to find. In fact, according to Budansky, Saddam Hussein had a contract as recently as 1995 with the Chinese and North Koreans to build such a tunnel bunker complex system. And according to sources, they did. And even though we've occupied Iraq for almost 2 years now, well, not quite, but almost, we haven't found any clues that would even suggest where the entrances to those tunnel complexes might be in Iraq. And in neighboring Iran and Syria, it's very likely that similar deep underground bunkers and tunnel systems do exist, which could house an arsenal of weapons of mass destruction, and in the case of Iran, nuclear weapons, which could be targeted within a moment's notice at Europe, or delivered by other means offshore from the United States and launched, destroying possibly a half dozen cities here throughout America. But very little is said about this because I guess either our intelligence sources are incompetent or they wish to keep the American people in the dark.
Well, I think there is a constant effort to manipulate the American people. They knew the attack was coming. They knew that there was a terrorist act of terrorists in this country. And yet we have, of course, up on my website, an FBI bulletin that was put out in Phoenix in 1999 talking about terrorism in America. They did not once mention Islamic terrorism. They talked about American militia groups, people who talked about the Constitution, people who talked about their rights as American citizens. They were the potential terrorists. Why did they conceal the terrorist movement, the Islamic terrorist movement? Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is John Spring, and we're certainly talking about what's going on in the Middle East and the very real threat that exists in the United States from these terrorist groups throughout the world, and this growing hatred for America by the entire Islamic world, by the Marxists in South America, by the Chinese who hate America, by the Russians who hate America. In fact, much of Europe hates America today. In fact, George Bush is one of the most unpopular men in Europe today. In the last hour, we talked about a CIA poll in Saudi Arabia of young men between 20 and 40, and, you know, 90% despise our president, 90% support bin Laden. And these are the upper-class people in Saudi Arabia. So what we're doing is managed to antagonize the entire world. And if America were to come under attack again, I think that there would be very little sympathy for us. Now, there are lots of things that could be done to protect America, and we're not doing any of those things. And you have to ask yourself, why is that? I mean, Israel has deployed the Nautilus infrared or laser system to protect itself from missiles. You're not hearing about this. You can go up on the website and web and pull down information on Nautilus. You'll find out that we'll be ready to try this out in the year 2007 to defend America. But Israel has it deployed today to protect Israel. And that's why they're not anywhere near as worried as you might think they would be with the prospect of literally hundreds of missiles being launched simultaneously to attack Israel. But you see, they have a defense for Israel. Apparently, at least if we're to believe what we're told, we have no defense for America still to this very day. Why would that be? Why would Israel have technology developed in America that's not available to defend America, but it's there to defend Israel? So many things are going on, John, that just don't make sense. Do you ever have that feeling?
Yes, very much so, Dr. Stan. Israel has a very active civilian defense system, and we have none whatsoever. They have issued gas masks to all family members of every Israeli family throughout the entire nation of Israel. They have issued means whereby people can seal off their windows so that any contaminants or gases or chemical reagents would not enter any home in any lethal amounts. But for some reason, we have never taken the initiative to provide our citizens with gas masks or other related equipment needed to defend each household, basically.
Well, that really doesn't make sense. Why would that? Why aren't we doing what would be logical if indeed we are threatened by enemies throughout the world today? Doesn't make sense, does it?
No, it doesn't. I don't know if I ever mentioned this to you, but my father was a chemical warfare officer before, during, and after the Second World War, and even during the Korean War with the reserves. But so often he mentioned that there were means available to defend the American civilians, but so little action was ever taken. And I think this was one of the tragics of American history during the Cold War, that we really made no adequate preparations to defend our people against a nuclear attack or some sort of a conventional attack with chemical reagents, chemical warfare, or biological warfare, as it was called then, or bacteriological warfare, as it was called then. It's now called biological warfare. So we have made no provisions to defend our population against any form of weapon of mass destruction. And I think it would behoove every person listening to this program, if they have never taken an emergency first aid course, to do so, because you have to understand that during such a terrorist attack or an actual attack with some type of weapon of mass destruction, you cannot dial 911 and expect to receive emergency assistance. It will not be available. You're going to have to fend for yourself, and if you don't know basic principles of first aid, you're not going to survive long enough to withstand anything further. So it's within those first few minutes. If you don't have knowledge of first aid, that you're going to perish, basically, or your household and loved ones. So I urge people to take a course and hope and pray that you never have to use it against a terrorist attack, but you might be able to save a life along the road, what have you, if there should be an accident that you come upon.
Well, I think we live in a very uncertain world. But I believe, of course, there's a strong spiritual component to everything that's going on. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Is there going to be a war in the Middle East? Ladies and gentlemen, there's already a war, and we're involved in it. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course we're talking about what's going on in the Middle East. The fact that there's no sooner an explosion in Beirut than we immediately point the finger at the wicked Syrians and Damascus, and we say, they did it. Now, what justification do we have for that? Well, absolutely none, other than the fact that we've said it and we pulled our ambassador out. Now, that's one of the first things you do before you're considering turning to hostilities. I don't know how soon the hostilities against Syria are going to come, but I will tell you right now that our military, as John said, is stretched very thin. And they're talking about reinstituting the draft, starting by drafting doctors and nurses, because we need more doctors and nurses because of the number of casualties, and we can't get people signing up. The Marines have, for the first time in many years, have not met their recruiting requirements. Why? Because an awful lot of people don't want to go over to fight in Iraq because they have serious questions. Why were there? After all, the president insisted that we had to go in because they had weapons of mass destruction, and then admitted, "Oh, sucks, I was wrong, but aren't we better getting rid of that Saddam Hussein, who my father financed? I mean, aren't we better off getting rid of that Saddam Hussein who's over there?" And, of course, Well, certainly Saddam Hussein is a wicked man, but then so is Putin and Russia and and Musharraf and Pakistan and the Saudi family and Saudi Arabia. So why did we want to go to war with Iraq? Because they were the weakest country over there. We could, of course, take them out very easily, and then we could have our troops permanently stationed as certainly the center for the coming attack on Syria and Iran, and that's exactly what William Kristol said and talked about when he interviewed Ted Koppel on Nightline back in 1992. So you have to understand, nothing is happening by accident. It's a long-range plan, but I really fear there's going to be a blowback. And to every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. That was one of the basic laws of physics that I learned when one of the few things I remember from physics.
I can concur.
Okay, fine. Well, anyway, we're going to be back in just a moment here. If you have a question or comment for our special guest this evening, John Spring, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Of course, I believe that we're entering into some very, very difficult times, economically, spiritually, and militarily. And I really believe, of course, that as the war continues to grow in the Middle East, as there is increasing, resistance to American occupation of Iraq, we're going to have to institute the draft. It's only a matter of time, but there'll be an incident that'll justify it in the minds of the American people. Well, Dr. Stan back here this Friday evening. Our guest this evening is John Spring. We're talking about what's going on in the Middle East. We're talking about the recent explosion in Lebanon. We're talking about the fact that America immediately, the day after that explosion in Lebanon, we immediately pulled our ambassador out of Syria, claiming that Syria had done this. Well, how do we know Syria had done it? They deny that they did it. And yet, of course, well, it's sort of like we insisted that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. That's why we had to attack him. We're insisting that Syria was responsible for the explosion in Beirut. Why we pulled our ambassador out? Is that a prelude to war? We'd like to know what you think out there in the listening audience. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or we're here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. John Spring, of course, has his own radio program in Southern California. And John, at least for the time being, would you be on after the end of this month or not?
We possibly may be on beyond this month, but at a different time, 2 hours earlier, at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And we might possibly still be on the same station, KSPA, which is 1510 on the AM dial, but more than likely we are going to their sister station, which is 1000 on the AM dial, serving primarily the San Diego area.
Well, that is a very excellent area. You might be far better off there.
Well, we have to keep making some changes because unless we get response and support from our listening audience, we can't justifiably stay on that station for more than a year just because it's a nice station. And the same thing is true with Radio Liberty, whether you're on shortwave or AM or FM radio. If you don't receive response from your listeners, you can't justifiably afford to stay on that station much longer. And I would urge all of your listeners listening tonight to keep that in mind, that we are listener-supported radio, and we do need your support to continue. Now, Dr. Stan, getting back to an earlier point that I alluded to regarding that the president of Lebanon is generally a Christian, and the premier or vice president, what he really is generally a Muslim. And the fact that this person was a premier rather than a president suggests that he probably was a Muslim. And generally speaking, Muslim terrorist groups do not go after other Muslim leaders if they have a choice. They would prefer to go after a former Christian leader. So that does not make a strong case for either Syria or Iran in this particular situation, but it would make a stronger case for, let's say, Israel or the CIA or some group that might be somewhat anti-Muslim in the Middle East.
Or maybe some group that wanted an incident to justify a war. And this is all speculation. I don't know. But I do know that the provoking an incident has been used over and over again to justify going to war.
Yes, and we found that true, of course, during 9/11, even though the nations of Afghanistan and Iraq were targeted well in advance of any 9/11 event. This goes back, as you pointed out many times on your programs, to 1997. When
1979, really.
Okay.
1979, when, of course, we toppled the Shah of Iran and brought the Ayatollahs to power, and then we incited the war with Afghanistan by actually beginning to fund the Mujahideen there, who were opposing the puppet government, and that established then the Afghan war, and then the CIA could come in and pour countless millions of dollars in there and then begin training the Muslims there, the Mujahideen, the holy warriors,
yes,
in this radical form of Islam, because radical Islam did not exist really before 1980, when we began to finance it and began to train the warriors in that, and then began bringing books into the Afghan schools, $51 million in money for textbooks to train the youth into radical Islam. And anybody who doubts that would be glad to send you clippings out of the Washington Times. The article is entitled "The ABCs of Jihad," going into how we financed this whole movement towards radical Islam, which existed no place except in the Muslim Brotherhood, a few radicals in Egypt and the Muslim Brotherhood, and then a few radicals in Saudi Arabia who were Wahhabis. But there was no threat from radical Islam prior to the CIA's investment in the war in Afghanistan. And now we have one of the finest enemies American tax dollars can buy.
Yes. Yes, we certainly do. But if I'm not mistaken, I believe it was around 1997 when the group led by William Crystal.
Oh, you're talking about the Project for the New American Century. Yes,
yes.
That was when they were organized, was 1997. And their website for our listeners, newamericancentury.org. Go ahead.
Yes, and it's my understanding that this group more or less formulated the targets of both Afghanistan and Iraq for a future time when they had a sympathetic leader in office in Washington, which happened to be George W. Bush when he was elected.
Well, of course, they actually asked Bill Clinton to invade Iraq in 1998. They asked him again in the year 2000. The letters are up on their website at newamericancentury.org. For the skeptic out there who said this could not be true, check it out. Prove me wrong. If I'm wrong, you got nothing to worry about. If I'm right, you better get down on your knees and begin praying, because we're in real trouble.
Amen to that. I'll certainly agree with you on that, Dr. Stan. So, basically, when the Bush administration came into office, one of the highest priorities that Dr. Condoleezza Rice was involved with, along with the Secretary of State Donald Rumsfeld and the Assistant Secretary of State Paul Wolfowitz and many others that you've alluded to already, they were planning the invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq well in advance of any 9/11. And we need to understand that 9/11 gave the ideal excuse for us to invade these two nations in the Middle East, and we did. And because the American people are now, again, somewhat complacent from their perspective, they may somehow generate or allow another operation to occur. As one of my former guests on Sound Off mentioned, Gordon Thomas, the farther we are away from 9/11, the closer we are to the next terrorist attack. Now, I hope we don't have another terrorist attack, but in order to carry out another attack or invasion in the Middle East and to get the support of the American people, it might take another event of that type or magnitude here in the United States or elsewhere in the world, so that the American people would become so irate and angry that we would want to rattle our sabers and say, yes, let's go after those dastardly Syrians or Iranians.
And certainly we're going to have to institute the draft. We don't want to, but we're going to have to. That's the only way we can defend ourselves, by going over there and killing people in the Middle East.
Yes.
That's how we're going to defend ourselves here in America. Because isn't it better to fight people in the Middle East than to fight them here at home? And I'd like to suggest, by going overseas to fight for freedom, you ensure there's going to be a loss of freedom here at home. And, of course, it's going to be used to justify taking away more of our freedom. And it's only going to, of course, incite Muslims throughout the world and Marxists throughout the world and radicals throughout the world to try to launch attacks on our own homeland. And we're laying ourselves open, I believe, for retribution, for what's referred to as blowback. When, of course, you attack another country, you can expect there's going to be an attack on yourself.
Yes.
And this is what Osama bin Laden says. You attacked us, we will attack you.
Yes. The only word that I have perhaps a few reservations about, Dr. Spann, is the word reinstitute. That implies bringing it back something that actually existed in that identical form at an earlier time, or a very similar form. If the draft is acted upon again, it will be somewhat different in that it will probably be a universal draft whereby everyone is called into active duty basically between possibly the ages of 71 and, I'm sorry, 17 and possibly 55. And it won't be just men, it will also be women. In the past, we have not drafted women, but because our sources are dwindling, our human resources, we're going to have to draft women. At least that's their rationale. And this does not set very well with me, because the women are the custodians of our children. They are the bearers of our children. And I'm afraid this is a way of further depopulating America's population, which doesn't sit very well with me.
I certainly agree with you totally, John, and I do believe that they intend to draft women in the next battle, next war, or the next draft, because we are already at war. But they have to have an incident to get the American people to go along with it, because there is tremendous resistance to that. It's all right when it's somebody else's son or daughter that are dying over in Iraq, but we just don't want it to affect us. And I fear that that's the attitude of many people in America, and it shouldn't be. We should be concerned about everybody who's dying over there. We should be concerned about the Iraqi women and children and men who are dying, and especially those who are dying when they're in American custody. We should be concerned about every American soldier and American airman, and certainly every American service woman who's over there who's dying. A war is a terrible, terrible thing. And why the American people are sitting idly by as our leaders lead us from one war to another, I just don't understand. Is it the fact that the people really don't understand that wars never end up as people anticipate they will? We start out with wars and we're all so enthusiastic about it, and then, of course, things go from bad to worse, and eventually the very nation that started the war from the strongest position can end up being totally destroyed. But there's no better way to change the world than through war, and to change the balance of power than through war. That was exactly what the leaders of the Carnegie Institute for International Peace were talking about at their meetings back in 1908 and 1909. And we are entering World War III. And where's the outcry from the American people? Well, as long as baseball and football and basketball are being played on a regular basis, people really don't seem to understand that war is the worst, most horrible thing in the world. In fact, as General Sherman said, and he was the one who led the Union Army that burned Atlanta and all the other towns they met,
yes,
encountered as they marched in the sea, and he said, "War is cruelty. You can't refine it." Amen. War is brutality. The only one who ever wants war are those who have never heard the shrieks or the cries or the groans of the wounded. War is hell.
Yes, it is, Dr. Stan. And what also concerns me is what may be taking place on the other side of the Pacific, the Western Pacific, the island nation of Taiwan, the Free Republic, with its duly elected officials. is looked upon as an enemy of the People's Republic of China. The winter monsoon will soon be settling down, and the waters of the Formosan Strait will again be tranquil and smooth, and that could very well mean that as early as the spring, a naval invasion of Taiwan could be carried out by the PLA, the People's Liberation Army. And there could very well be another diversion in the Middle East, such as invading Syria or possibly Iran or some other incident elsewhere within that realm that we're completely unaware of right now. And that could be a distraction that would prevent us from being able to come to the aid or assistance in defending Taiwan, a nation of 22 million people, highly skilled, highly well-educated people that have learned something about freedom and a constitutional-type government, sort of a rare commodity in Asia nowadays, and a very thriving economy. But I'm just wondering if the American people are even aware of this nation and the consequences that would occur if and when this nation were taken over by communist China. This would change the way South Korea, Japan, the Philippines, Malaysia, and Singapore, and Indonesia, and Thailand look towards the United States.
And certainly you're absolutely right, John, because if they see we will not stand behind Taiwan, that they will align themselves with China because they will realize the Americans will not stand behind them either.
Absolutely. So we have some very difficult situations that we will be facing, as well as here with our Congress preparing to vote for both CAFTA and the FTAA, measures which will destroy our sovereignty as a nation. For those of you that are very concerned about illegal immigration, basically that will be academic or a thing of the past, because in reality, once these measures are passed, it will be only a matter of time whereby there will no longer be borders that will be patrolled or customs officers inspecting for contraband. That would all become a thing of the past.
In other words, we would have open borders. Anybody from anywhere in the Western Hemisphere or northern part of the Western Hemisphere would be able to come to America. We would have a common currency. We would have common laws. We would have the same freedom and stability that they have in Mexico today.
Or Guatemala.
And people do not understand that one reason why we're in Iraq today, one reason we're fighting in the Middle East, is to divert our attention from the fact that there is a plan for world government, and of course the next step in that plan is to unite all the governments in the Western Hemisphere. So while our attention is fixed overseas, while our attention is fixed in the Middle East or in the Far East, we are losing our freedom here at home. Because there is another force that nobody really wants to talk about, and that is the spiritual force that is moving to unite the world. That is the satanic force, the satanic movement, and they have disciples at the highest levels of our government today. And just as when Hillary and Bill were in the White House and they invited Gene Houston in to conjure up spirits, and when the Reagans were in the White House and Nancy was going to the astrologers all the time for advice, so today there are people in the White House, I'm sure, that have ties, deep ties to the occult, who belong to secret organizations that are dedicated to establishing a new world order and a new world religion. So while we look at the Project for the New American Century, as we look at all the other things we talk about, is Osama bin Laden working for the CIA or not? Well, it's irrelevant. The important thing is that powerful forces working behind the scenes that are intent upon destroying our freedom. And force behind that, Lucifer himself. I got a pamphlet today from the Lucius Trust talking about how wonderful the United Nations is, and we're moving rapidly to world government. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, John Spring. John, we've got about 3 minutes. Would you like to wrap up the program for us?
Well, Dr. Stan, we don't know who was responsible for the terrible bombing that took place in Lebanon recently. But we do know that there are major forces out there that would like us to invade Syria for various reasons. And we need to become aware that there are many fronts that we must become aware of. We must be aware that there are distractions and deceptions. But most importantly, we must continue to pray and read the Bible and ask the Lord, for our Heavenly Father, for wisdom, so that we in turn will make good and wise decisions and elect leaders that really represent our best interests. And I urge everyone to support Radio Liberty. You're doing a wonderful service, Dr. Stan, and I know the Lord is going to continue to bless you and to protect you and your family and your staff in your wonderful ministry.
Well, I appreciate that, John. I feel I'm privileged to have the opportunity to reach out across the country, reach out across the Western Hemisphere, to reach out across the world by radio and by television, by by shortwave and by internet, and yeah, occasionally we even get on television, but not very often anymore.
Yes.
Anyway, really, of course, the message must get out, and you're putting out the message, or many people putting out the message, but we've just got to keep doing what we're doing. I do hope that you can get on that station down in San Diego, and then, of course, that you can build that base of support so you can stay on the air, because the more people that are on the air, the better it is. The good thing, I talk to the people from Southwest Radio Church that have a very parallel movement to ours, although they're certainly far more influential. They've got a great, great staff and great outreach, but they were amazed. They went to Los Angeles this last weekend, I think it was Anaheim, and they put out 300 shares expecting that they get most of them filled, and they had to bring in 50 additional chairs, and the people stayed there all day hanging on the information that was being brought out as they're trying to make people understand about the spiritual battle we talk about. So there's a lot to be encouraged about, John. God bless you. Thank you for all you do.
Well, thank you so much. The Lord continue to bless you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, I guess this evening has been John Spring. It does a great job down in Los Angeles. Each of us are individuals. We're dependent upon those people who believe there's a problem to help us. If you can get on the radio, go ahead and do it. If you can't, then help John or help Radio Liberty. Help the people who are speaking out. Help Southwest Radio Church. They're doing a great job bringing knowledge to America. Well, let me just mention John's website is www.worldstrategy.netfirms.com. That's www.worldstrategy.netfirms.com. And to go there, you can get John's material, and sometimes you can even hear him there live on the Internet. So he deserves our support and certainly our prayers as well. Well, this is the time I want to mention that Radio Liberty is reprinting the book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and the more we print, of course, the better situation we get into. And as a result of that, we are offering to our listeners, if you'd like to get a full case of Brotherhood of Darkness at 62 books, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. That's a case of Brotherhood of Darkness, 62 copies. And, of course, you call 1-800-544-8927 for information. We hope that many of you will want to get copies. If you're not already members of the Radio Liberty family of supporters and you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, why, you can call us at that same number. If you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, of course, that number is still there. If you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, our November newsletter deals with the fact that they're poisoning our children with fluoride. The December newsletter is the testimony of Dr. William Hersey, who is a scientist who works for the Environmental Protection Agency in the Division of Drinking Water, and of course he is the vice president of the Union of the EPA Scientists, and they're frightened to death. They know that they're poisoning America, but of course their message is muted. Certainly Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly and the other establishment commentators are not going to tell you that they're poisoning our children with mercury and with fluoride and with aspartame and with other things in the vaccinations, and that's why one in every six American children has a neurodevelopmental abnormality, not happening by accident, but by intent. For as Bertrand Russell had said so well, by diet, injections, and injunctions, we will mold the character of the people. By diet, injections, and injunctions. So, mercury in the injections, and of course fluoride in the diet, and aspartame in the diet. What a convenient means of poisoning the people of our country. If you want a compliant population, if you want to destroy what was once a Christian nation. If you haven't seen the videos, they sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3, 4, or 10-hour versions. If you haven't seen Megiddo, the video or the DVD. If you haven't seen my video entitled None Dare Call It Genocide, or certainly our Iraq the Untold Story, or The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, or Population Control, or Sustainable Development, The Road to World Tyranny, or Iraq, the Road to World Government. All of these, of course, are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. I might mention we do carry, of course, the Berkey products. If you're interested in them, go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And of course, tell other people about our program. Tell them that they can listen to us 5 hours a day on the Internet and not get a thing accomplished, but they're getting an awful lot of information. That's radioliberty.com, and you can pull down many of our programs that are archived there. You can certainly look at the various books and videos and audio tape sets that are there that will help you to understand the true nature of the spiritual battle we're engaged in. And again, if you're interested in the case of Brotherhood of Darkness, or you're interested simply in one copy, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war. America, our future, our families are under attack today. So, until Monday, when we'll be back with you again here at Radio Liberty, we ask you to pray for America, to pray for our leaders, pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until Monday, when we'll be back with you once again, may the Lord be with you.